A 7-year-old girl climbs into a psychiatrist's lap and tries to unzip his pants. A tiny boy rocks silently in a dog cage surrounded by his own waste. A teenage girl collapses unconscious in a school bathroom, her body shutting down despite no drugs in her system. These aren't random tragedies. They're the visible scars of invisible wounds, moments when trauma rewires a developing brain so profoundly that survival itself becomes a form of suffering. What makes childhood trauma particularly devastating isn't just the pain of the moment, it's how those moments literally reshape the architecture of a growing brain. When we understand this biological reality, everything changes. How we treat troubled children, how we structure our schools, even how we think about human nature itself. The question isn't whether traumatized children can heal, it's whether we're willing to meet them where they actually are, not where we think they should be. The brain develops like a house built from the ground up. The brainstem controls breathing and heart rate. The limbic system handles emotions and memory. The cortex enables language and planning. Each level depends on the stability of what came before. When threat activates the stress response, adrenaline floods the system. In children with developing neural pathways, repeated trauma doesn't just create bad memories, it fundamentally alters the wiring itself, building a brain optimized for a dangerous world that may no longer exist. Brain scans reveal the damage. Overall brain size reduced by up to 15%, underdeveloped regions responsible for emotional control, and a shrunken hippocampus, crucial for forming new memories. The amygdala, the brain's threat detector, frequently enlarges, creating a hair trigger alarm system that sees danger everywhere. These aren't birth defects. They're adaptations to hostile environments that become prisons when the danger passes. Justin spent his first 5 years caged by a dog breeder who fed him but rarely spoke or touched him. At 6, he couldn't walk or talk. Brain scans showed damage resembling advanced Alzheimer's, what doctors called permanent brain damage. They were wrong. Using techniques for feral animals, staying low, avoiding eye contact, making soft rhythmic sounds, doctors reached Justin. Within weeks, he sat up. Within months, he walked. 2 years later, 8-year-old Justin stood outside his kindergarten classroom, clutching a backpack, his crayon note reading, "Thank you." Justin's recovery revealed a crucial principle. Healing must follow the same sequence as healthy development. You can't teach algebra before counting or address attachment before self-regulation. This insight led to the neurosequential model, matching interventions not to chronological age, but to actual developmental level, starting with the brainstem and working upward. 4-year-old Sandy refused to use knives, drink milk, or answer the door. She'd watched her mother murdered and survived having her throat cut. Knives meant death. White milk looked like blood. The doorbell announced her attacker's arrival. Everyday objects had become loaded weapons through association. Memory carries experience forward through time. When neural patterns fire together repeatedly, they wire together. See a fire truck while hearing a siren enough times, and the sound alone triggers the image. For traumatized children, these associations become dangerously distorted. A raised hand means violence. A closed door means abandonment. A man's cologne triggers panic. The brain constantly processes sensory information, comparing it against stored patterns. We ignore familiar patterns through habituation, why we forget routine moments like brushing teeth. But we remember when familiar patterns occur in unusual contexts, especially when marked by strong emotion. For traumatized children, their entire database of associations becomes corrupted, making safe situations feel dangerous and dangerous situations feel normal. After the Branch Davidian disaster in Waco, mental health professionals arrived with protocols and treatment plans. But research shows formal therapy immediately after trauma can actually harm recovery. Instead, the team created a therapeutic web where children sought different adults based on their needs. The children who healed fastest were those released into loving homes, regardless of beliefs or techniques. 7-year-old Peter arrived from a Russian orphanage unable to speak, connect, or play. After his teacher explained brain development to classmates, the children transformed from bullies to nurturers. Within months, his language exploded and his ability to form attachments strengthened. This reveals trauma's deepest truth. People, not programs, change people. The brain expects consistent, nurturing relationships during childhood. When present, they create a protective buffer against adversity. Healing relationships don't require professional training. They require consistency, patience, and genuine care. Teachers, coaches, neighbors, cafeteria workers, anyone can become part of the healing web. 17-year-old Amber collapsed unconscious after her former abuser called. Medical tests found nothing, but naloxone, an opioid antidote, revived her within 90 seconds. She'd overdosed on her brain's natural opioids, triggered by the traumatic reminder. Beyond fight or flight, many traumatized children use dissociation, the brain disconnecting from the body to create protective numbness. Self-mutilation and heroin both trigger this internal escape through brain opioids. This insight opened new treatments. Opioid blockers like naltrexone prevented dissociative episodes, but created anxiety when numbness lifted. The solution? Shorter-acting blockers during therapy, exposing patients to triggers in safe environments while preventing dissociation, gradually teaching the brain these situations no longer required escape. Understanding dissociation as an adaptive response rather than a character flaw transforms how we approach self-harm and addiction. Trauma is fundamentally relational. The worst experiences involve being harmed by caregivers or abandoned when protection is needed. Recovery requires rebuilding connection, trust, and security. Yet institutions often compound trauma. Schools suspend traumatized children for behavioral problems, severing healing relationships. Foster systems move children frequently, disrupting the attachments needed for recovery. Trauma-informed communities train everyone who interacts with children, teachers, police, judges, pediatricians, to recognize trauma symptoms and respond appropriately. Teachers learn that inability to focus might signal hypervigilance rather than defiance. Police recognize that aggression may require de-escalation, not force. One inner-city school implementing these principles reduced punishment referrals from 498 to 161 and suspensions from 36 to 9. The neurosequential model has been adopted by thousands of clinicians and multiple governments. Its success lies in creating visual maps of each child's developmental history rather than applying diagnostic labels. By understanding which brain regions were affected and their developmental sequence, clinicians match interventions to actual needs. Childhood trauma reveals an uncomfortable truth. There are no shortcuts to healing. Traumatized children carry experiences in their brain structure, neural pathways expecting danger, stress systems calibrated for war zones, attachment circuits where connection means pain. Yet even severe damage can heal with what development needed originally: consistent, patient, loving care. Every teacher understanding why students can't sit still, every foster parent persisting through rejection, every community investing in relationships over punishment, each becomes part of the healing web. We cannot undo what happened, but we can refuse to let their past define their future. Move toward the wounded, not away. Build connection, not walls. Healing happens in ordinary moments when someone sees past the behavior to the frightened child within and stays.